and welcome to today's episode of the Imperfect Athlete Podcast. Today you will hear the second part of my conversation with Ryan De Bruyne. Last time we talked about his career as a professional volleyball player, and today we're going to talk about something really interesting. After he retired from professional athletics, Ryan went and started a completely different but really interesting second career. And we'll be talking about how he uses the lessons he learned in his career as an athlete in his new career. Since this episode is relatively long, I'm going to start it off straight away. So I hope you enjoy this episode of the Imperfect Athlete Podcast. After your career as a professional volleyball athlete, you have started a different career that I would classify as in a performance environment. You have written and published two of your own science fiction fantasy books now. And I want to talk a little bit about the lessons you've learned throughout that career and how you've used some of the things that we talked about in the previous episode that you learned in your athletic career and how that translates to your new career. But before we do that, we want to give the listeners a little summary or explanation of what the books are about and sort of how the story evolves.
Absolutely. So the books are a subgenre of sci-fi fantasy. They're called Lit RPG, which stands for like a literary take on a role-playing game. Which is really cool. I fell in love with the genre specifically because I love playing video games. That was probably my downtime when I was playing sports, was often video games, to the point where, since we're on a show about mistakes, where that was also one of my mistakes, was spending too much time playing video games. That really does contribute to the writing. The books that I've written are something called a post-apocalyptic lit RPG, which is, in my opinion, one of the most fantastical ways to write, because you get to take the present day Earth and picture what would happen if, you know, game systems like leveling and stats and experience and, you know, all these things were suddenly thrown into it and a monster spawns in your backyard. What's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to probably protect your family, or you might, you know, be the type that just wants to go out and get stronger the fastest. That's the competition you want. And the whole idea of these books is exploring where my main character, Rockland Barkley, has just had this happen. He wakes up alone in Algonquin Park in the middle of one of the largest parks in Ontario, for sure. With nothing but wildlife and things are evolved wildlife that wants to now kill him around him. And he needs to get out of there to get back to Ottawa to find his family and try to save them. So, in a way, you know, suddenly magic comes back. The book could also be described as an alternate history, because one of my other things that I really like to do, is to picture why we all have these common myths and beliefs. Why does everybody know what Atlantis is? You know, maybe it's the Disney movie. Sure, absolutely. But I'm sure that myth existed before the Disney movie. And so part of it is taking myths like that, where a civilization with so much technology sunk into the ocean, saying, well, here's a real story behind that, and just weaving something out of it that could be true, but obviously is just me saying, in my world, this is why that exists. This is why, you know, we have Jormungandr, the myth, Thor as, you know, a god. This is why religion exists. This is why, you know, we have video games now, is because a real video game existed on Earth and what powered it was lost. And now that power has come back.
That's really interesting. And I'm correct, like, you've just published your second book.
Absolutely, yeah. November 1st, my second book came out. My audiobook actually for it came out yesterday. So really, very recent, January 9th, 2020, just came out. So.
And where, just quickly, where can people find these
books? Amazon. They're only available on Amazon. I'm just doing the Kindle Unlimited, which means it locks me into Amazon as my platform, which is a great opportunity for new writers. It's something unique in the sense that you pay a monthly due, just like Netflix, just like anything like that. And if you're reading an author's book, they get paid per page that you read. So it really gives young developing authors like myself the opportunity to be seen by more people, and then you get to build a following and go from there.
And if people want to find this book on Amazon, what should they search for?
Ether Collapse, and Equalize is the first book in the series.
Perfect. I have it in front of me, so I could have told you the title as well, but I thought it would be better for Ryan to do it. Now, since you mentioned Amazon, on the bio you have on there, you mentioned that you've always wanted to be a writer, but you never were able to sit down long enough and put your mind to it to really, you mentioned, finish a story, and then in the next sentence, or even start it.
Yeah.
So looking back at it now, what do you think was like at the beginning of that? Like, why weren't you able to sit down and you know, write the stories that you clearly had in your mind?
And I think that's, again, the habits that you form. And I think that was the big one for me was, again, that same mistake I made in sports was coming to bite me in every other career. I was unable to build a habit of saying, this is what I'm going to do, and then doing it. And I think, you know, you mentioned that at the beginning with your mistake of the week, saying, you know, you don't want to be stubborn in it, but you do want to be persistent in it. And, you know, sitting down for a certain period of time each day and writing, even if that point in my day was hectic and crazy, sitting down in front of a computer and at least looking at my story or thinking about my story would have been beneficial. But at the time, if I was in that headspace of my life is all over the place right now, I wouldn't sit down. And it was it completely, you know, derailed any habit that I could have formed. And now that I've learned through all this other, through my other career of being an athlete and all the reading and all the, you know, maturing that I've done, I've learned that, okay, you need to sit down and do it. Whether that be, you know, you don't want to sit down and do it for 8 hours a day. That's stubborn. You know, that's exactly what you're talking about. That's you trying to force as much as you can into something when, you know, 2 hours here will get you the same productivity, but then taking a break and giving your mind a different task for a bit and coming back to it, you're actually able to possibly produce more.
Mm. And I think it's really cool to see how you're using that lesson you learned from sport to take it into writing. Would you say that it's similar? You say like, oh, I just kind of like write for 2 hours. And you know, there's in sport, there's a reason why practices don't tend to go for much more than 2 hours.
Absolutely.
That has some physical part of it, but it also definitely has some mental part. Do you feel like the amount of time you can spend at one sitting to write is similar to that?
You definitely should be putting a cap on it. Like, I mean, if you look at it, and I'll use analogies to sport because it makes the most sense. I mean, if you put in 8 hours of work in the gym playing volleyball, and then outside of that in the gym lifting weights, you were going to break yourself down. You were not going to make it through a season. And that's just the way it's going to work. You know, by the start of the season, you might be in probably better shape than you are at the end. And I think that applies to almost any career that you're going to take. If you put in 8 hours of just straight work on one single thing and you try to force as much into it as you can, you're actually more likely to add a lot of things that aren't needed in there that you then have to correct at a later date. Just like with, you know, with going overboard in the gym in a sport, if you're adding in shin splints, if you're adding in knee problems, if you're adding in shoulder problems by overdoing it, you then have to go back and correct those. So instead of you getting better in the 6 months that was your original goal, you just extended it to a year. And I think that also applies to my writing, is that if I try to force in too much, my editing process is just going to take longer. Mm. Whereas if I step back from it, take a moment and plot some stuff out and change the tasks that I'm doing, right? So it's 2 hours of writing forward in my book, and then the next hour might be me, you know, plotting what I want to do and what new things have come up, and then taking 2 hours at the gym and then coming back. And that all clears your mind so you can do more in a day.
So I'm really interested in sort of that process that you describe of like, oh, I'll do 2 hours running forward. And, you know, from a sport background as a coach, I have a year plan that develops into practice plans and it kind of defines what I do. Did you, when you started your first book, did you just have an idea and you started writing, or did you write out like a plan? Or like, how did you go about, you know, I guess the end result is a few hundred pages of book.
Absolutely.
And when you look at it, it's like, well, that must seem like a daunting task when you started. How did you go about that?
And I think you're 100% right. Like I outlined it was my first step. You know, I obviously had a huge outline in my head. I mean, the series is going to be, the first part of the series is 5.5 books. The entire world is going to encompass probably somewhere in the range of 15 to 20 books. So I had this huge overarching thought of what I could do with it. Mm. And then it was taking it and saying, well, here's the milestones along the way. Just like when you're planning a practice in sports and you say, okay, well, I have this really important game against, you know, Friedrichshafen, you know, in November 29th, that, you know, you don't say, well, I'm going to go super heavy on the week of November 22nd. You say, okay, I'm going to go really hard, and then I'm going to give my athletes time to recover. Mm-hmm. And that's what a good coach will do. They'll plan that out for the athletes, but that's also what an athlete should start to understand as well. The longer they play, they realize that you need to have these moments where you're not putting in as much time in the gym, as much time in the weight room, you know, off season, preseason, all these things, you know, and during the season. Each one is a unique phase in a year, and the entire year can be planned out just like in a book. And so I found some books that, you know, we keep coming to books, but, you know, knowledge is in books. And so I found some books that helped me find an outline that I went with. I believe it was called The Hero's Journey. And I started looking through it and started seeing similar things I had seen across multiple books. And in The Hero's Journey, it actually shows you the similarities that Harry Potter, Star Wars, and one that is not coming to mind, but another entire story starts the exact same. It's an orphan who, you know, and it goes forward from there. And that's, to me, what helped in the sense of, okay, that large task that you just said of a 550-page book just made it smaller.
Yeah. So, obviously, you have now written two books. So, what are some things that, before you started the second book, what are some of the mistakes you realized you made writing the first one, and what did you change in terms of that writing process?
Absolutely, and I think that's a question that all authors struggle with. I put a lot of exposition into that book and the first book, and exposition being you're explaining what happens as opposed to showing what happens. And that's one of those lessons that, you know, a seasoned author knows extremely well. It's show, not tell, is what the lesson I've read now since has said. And I'm now reinvesting in myself to learn those mistakes and correct them. And in doing so, the second book has changed drastically. I tried to add in more dialogue. I tried to add in actually less elements that pulled you out of the story. I had some comments from, people that I, you know, value their opinion that said, yeah, I got pulled out of the story by this. This pulled me out. Stuff, things along those lines. And so by taking that constructive criticism, because it was given in the right way, and then using it to propel myself forward and adjust my writing style, I believe, and I've heard many comments that the second book has actually turned out superior to the first, and I hopefully will have the third book turn out even better.
And I think it's really interesting. It's not a world that I think a lot of people, especially people in sport, get to listen to. It's like, how do you go about doing these things? And it's interesting to see that all, and that's why I mentioned performance environment at the beginning of the of this episode, is all these different parts, all these different ways of doing things, whether it's sport, whether it's writing, whether it's your work, they're all performance environments in the way that they work similarly, where you need to plan, you need to know what you're doing, but also you need to be able to take criticism and to take your own criticism and look back and say, what did I do wrong?
and how do I want to change that? And what I find really interesting is how you mention sort of like, oh, I think that the second book came out superior to the first book. And what people can't see here is that that's not brought to me with a nonverbal communication of like, I'm annoyed at the first book. It's brought to me with, I'm really proud of the second. And that kind of brings us back to what we talked about last episode, where it's like the ability to make and face mistakes is really important. And please correct me if I'm wrong. It doesn't seem like you're annoyed that the first book wasn't where you wanted to be. You're really happy that the second book is where it is now.
Absolutely. I think the big one that the saying that I go by, and it's written on my wall in my office, is take your ego out of it. And to think that, you know, my very first book was going to be the masterpiece, the Harry Potters, the Lord of the Rings, all these books that fantasy lovers will know, is extremely egotistical. And I think for me, it was taking my ego out of all these things, taking my ego out and saying, look, like, I am going to be imperfect. And this is called the imperfect athlete, but you're going to be imperfect in things that you do. And it's the journey that you make to become a little less imperfect. You're never going to get to be perfect. I mean, I don't care what book you look at. That's the lesson there. To me, once I became a writer, I realized that books that are published aren't perfect. But in my head, they were. You know, before I started writing, I believed strongly that every published book out there that I had read had gone, and it does, it has to go, like, especially through mainstream publishing, it has to go through so many hoops and editing, and it's seen by so many eyes. In my opinion, every book was perfect. And then you start seeing it from the other side of the equation, and you realize that every book is not perfect. And that's the lesson I took from it. And that has helped me say, yeah, my first book is definitely not perfect. My first book is a great start. And I am only going to get better as I go through my career. It's the idea of, how long have you been a human being? Well, I've been alive 33 years now. So I'm pretty good at that. Okay. How long have I been writing? A year. How good of a human being was I? Or, you know, when I was 1 year old, I could barely hold anything. I couldn't walk, you know, like, there's a whole bunch of things. I couldn't run, that's for sure. You know, so that's the premise that I'm now building on.
Yeah. And I hope people understand how this ties into what my show is about. We see athletes and we see them like, wow, they're perfect.
Yeah.
But first of all, they're not. There never are. When you get on the inside and you see a lot of things, you're like, wow, this is littered with mistakes. But also, they didn't start out being perfect. If you're starting out, if you're a young athlete, or even if you just pick up a new hobby or sport, you're going to make mistakes in the beginning, and probably a lot of them. But as Ryan said, just try to be a little bit less imperfect every single time. Hello, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Just taking a little moment to tell you about the new website I recently launched for my business. On this website, there is what I do, my services, but there's also a lot on social media, Instagram, YouTube. This podcast is on there, and it holds all the information that you need in order to get a better understanding of what I do and what I can mean to you as an individual, whether you are an athlete, a coach, or somebody in a corporate job, as well as what I can mean to teams, both in sports and outside of sports. If you are interested in the things that you're hearing here, please go check it out, and you can contact me through there as well. So travel to www.jwkmentalperformance.com to find out more about my business. Now, let's get back to the podcast. You recently told me, and we actually discussed this quite a bit, you made a decision to make writing your full-time occupation. I kind of want to look forward and say, like, what do you feel like are the possible mistakes and risks that you could face while making this decision? It's a you know, it's obviously quite a big life decision that you made, really going for this new career. What are you foreseeing could be problems?
Absolutely, and I think some of those are, you know, are you can almost directly correlate to sports, and it's, you know, you're everything that you do, whether it be sport or writing, at least, sorry, for what I've been doing, it gets judged by not you specifically, it gets judged by outside forces. So when I publish a book, I'm counting on the people who read it to like it, share it with friends. You know, when I'm playing a sport, I'm counting on my skill to shine through and for, you know, managers and things like this to recognize that. And, you know, the fact that I wanted my record to shine through, and then I get another contract, or I, you know, get to play further in the tournament. So for me, I think, you know, the biggest fear that I have, the biggest mistake that, you know, I've seen happen with people is they say the wrong thing. You know, it's, they alienate most of their fan base by, you know, just the wrong word used, the, you know, responding to a criticism with anger as opposed to breaking down that criticism and finding out what they're actually saying. And so I took that from sport, and I'm trying my very best to take that into writing. And every comment that I get on social media, I respond to, whether it be a negative comment or a positive comment, I respond to in the same light. You know, this is something that is helping me. A positive comment usually gets a, you know, a response of, you just made my day, thank you so much. You know, I don't want to call it humble, because it's not humble. It's being aware that your fans, or, you know, the people that are outside, you can make your career, sure, but there's a lot of contributing factors there. And so a negative, you know, comment gets a response of me looking at it, you know, gauging if it's just a response that I can ignore, or if it's something that actually highlights an actual problem, and then responding. And usually my response, so one of the big criticisms, which was interesting to deal with, was that because Lit RPG is such a, there's really only so many ways that you can write Lit RPG, I've been compared to other books, and people have told me that I've stolen ideas from other books. And so, you know, after seeing them, I actually considered, okay, well, I've read all those books. Did they actually contribute to my book? And absolutely they did. You know, like, without a doubt. I mean, these are people that I admire. These are people that when I met, I had a squee moment, as I call it, you know, where you're just goo goo girl over, you know, oh, this is amazing. This is my favorite author. It's so incredible. And, you know, these are people that I truly respect. But on the flip side of that, my response was, these are the pinnacles of our genre. I'm just honored that you're comparing me to them. You know, for you to say that it's so similar that you didn't like my book, that's not actually an insult to me. That's me saying, I'm so glad that I could write a similar enough story to one of my idols that now you're saying this, because that to me is actually a compliment.
It's a really interesting take on, you know, sort of changing the frame of mind on these things. Obviously, you never want people to be disappointed when they read your book or see your team play or see you play. But, you know, if they say you're copying somebody else, probably means that you're doing it right.
Well, like, look at Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. I mean, I'm hoping everybody's seen the videos of, you know, where they literally line them up side by side and show Michael making a play and then Kobe making an identical play. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if Kobe ever said so, but I believe that Kobe modeled his game off of Michael Jordan. And, you know, that's not, Kobe is still one of the greatest players to ever play the game, you know? And yeah, you know, if it works, you should try to use it, you know? And that's the same to me in writing, in the sense that I made some decisions to use, I would call it a trope that the other author used, because it helped me get you to know the character. So a great example of this is, my character starts alone by himself. And one of the reasons I chose to do that was because every book that I had read where the character starts by himself, you get a chance to connect with the main character, as opposed to so much going on in the background that the main character might not shine through. I chose to start him by himself and have a few chapters for you to acclimatize. And I think it helped. Whether that's true or not is obviously up to the reader, but I I believe that that was a good choice. And that is what some people will say, well, this character also started alone. You're copying that.
Mm.
Okay, I can see your point.
Yeah.
But the reason that that book worked is also why my book worked. And Michael Jordan, Kobe. The reason that that shot worked and that style worked is why Kobe and Michael are both considered two of the greatest players to ever play the game.
Yeah, and if you take this back to coaching, you won't be able to come up with every single part of, you know, your plan on your own. You're going to say, hey, I saw that person do this and I thought that was a great idea. I'm going to try that and then change it to
match your style.
To my style. And even in my work as a mental performance trainer, that's what I do. I try to read and listen to as much and as many ideas as I can. And some of them I'm like, oh, that's really great. I want to try it. And then I give it a try. I'm like, that works, but I want to do it this way. Yeah. And a lot of, I think, techniques that I end up sticking with and I end up using a lot for athletes are, it's not that they're not my idea. It's just that the inspiration from it doesn't necessarily, you know, wasn't completely mine, but you know, it doesn't, to me, that doesn't matter because I'm not copying somebody else's work. I'm not trying to, you know, make money of doing somebody else's work. I'm just trying to gather as much information and say, hey, this works, you know, and even in smaller things, like for my work, I do a lot of public speaking.
Yeah.
I think it's a myth to think that the way I've learned to do public speaking is just like this innate talent or something that I've developed. No, I looked at a lot of people, and the people I look for a lot of for inspiration are comedians.
Yeah,
because in my opinion, comedians are the best public speakers out there. They to connect with an audience that well is really important. And so I looked at it, I was like, how do they move? How do they talk? Where are their pauses? And I'm not even trying to be funny. Right, my goal is not to be funny, but my goal is to captivate the minds of the people that are listening to me. And so you take a few things, and for me, one of the things that I noticed is movement. Stationary is boring, so yeah. Move around.
Yeah.
Do some things with your hands. Pause after something you say that's important. You know, and for the comedian, it's for people to reflect and then laugh. Think, oh, that was funny. For me, it's to say something and people... To give them a moment and think, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But if I go over that moment where they can think, they don't think, and they don't get that revelation of like, oh, that makes sense. So it's interesting, I think, is a great lesson. And it really ties into the concept of mistakes.
Yeah.
Is you have to make mistakes in order to learn and adjust, but you don't have to start at zero.
No, exactly.
Look at people that you admire and say, what are they doing that I think is great? What are they doing that I think is not great? And learn from mistakes that people have made before. And part of the goal of this show is to show people these kinds of things, right? Ryan mentions, like, oh, it was really important for me is to get into a habit, to make a plan, to make an outline. And that's how I go about such a big project. Learn from that. Don't go and start at zero, which, you know, Ryan maybe did when he first tried to start writing stories. He just went and wrote a story and it became incohesive. And like, so learn what other people do and use it. And I think it's really interesting how you said, like, I don't see that as that much of a negative criticism. I kind of see that as, okay, that means I'm looking at the right things.
Well, exactly. And I think the other side of that is if you consider it, the writing has been done for however many, you know, hundreds of years, thousands of years. I don't actually have the exact date that somebody wrote for the first time, but stories have been told for thousands of years. So it's already been done. It's everything, you know, people say every story has already been told. It's just how you tell the story. It's the characters that are involved in that story that make it unique. And I think that's applies directly to sport. It's most things in sport have already been tried. I mean, in volleyball specifically, you see a change from the high ball game to the, you know, the fast set game, back to the high ball game, back to the fastball game. Mm. And that's gone through cycles in volleyball, and volleyball is not even that old of a sport, right? So when you think about it, nothing is being invented. There's very few things that are being truly invented as this is absolutely new. It's been done before. What you do as an athlete and what we all do as athletes is you take something that, you know, one of the best in the world is doing and you adapt it to you. You try it and you find out that your body just can't move the same way, or, you know, you just don't have the same vision of the court that this player has. But there are things that they're doing that you are capable of doing, but just in a modified way. And guess what? Your way works. So suddenly you're going to keep it, right? You very rarely model yourself after somebody that you can't emulate. Because if you can't yes. emulate them, I'm not going to go out and look for people that are 6 feet tall. I'm going to go out and look for people that are 6'6" with some jumping ability. You know, I'm not going to go model myself after your previous guest, Justin Duff, because he touched 12 feet. You know, I'm going to model myself after somebody like, Dante, you know, who has a very far, broad jumping ability and can jump very well, has a, you know, relatively fast arm swing, those sort of things.
Yeah, that's a great lesson to take into account, is find people that you identify with. When we talk about the research here, these are called models, where we model our behavior and our actions based on people. And a really important factor in how effective is modeling towards people is how similar are you to the model. Yeah. If you are too different, if I try and play basketball like Shaq, I am going to have a terrible time. But if I play like a little bit of a smaller guy that has some height but is relatively agile and fast, okay, now I can maybe learn something. Definitely a lot of really interesting takeaways from how does sport and a different craft like writing a book relate, and what are the lessons that you learn. And I hope that everyone sees that performance environments are performance environments. We often talk about sport as being the performance environment, but whatever you do, if you're trying to be the best at it, or you're trying to be your best at it, it is a performance environment. And it doesn't matter whether that is your job as an accountant or a lawyer, whether it's writing a book, whether it's being in sport or being in school. If you want to be the best you can be, you'll have to take these lessons and kind of apply them. Ryan, thank you very much for being on. Do you have one final takeaway for our listeners?
Basically, just to reiterate what you just said, and that's that, why do you think every athlete who has a kid wants them to be in sports? And that's because of all the life lessons that you learn through these competitive environments that sport produces, and then you do take those away to your everyday life. And I think it was very well put, so I just wanted to reiterate it.
Thank you. If you're interested in reading Ryan's book, search Ether Collapse. Equalize is the first one, and then it's the second one. You can buy them hard copy, Kindle, and audiobook, right? So whichever you prefer. If you have any questions for Ryan, you can just find him as Ryan DeBruyne on Facebook. Are you on Instagram too?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook, yeah.
Instagram and Facebook. Or if you have any questions you can't find him, you can get them to me, and I'll get them to Ryan, and we'll do that. You can find me as JWK Mental Performance Training on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Oh, and YouTube. I'm on YouTube too. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Imperfect Athlete. And I hope to see everyone again in the next episode.
The Imperfect Athlete podcast is completely driven by my interest and passion for this topic. If you made it this far into the episode, leave a like, review, and tell your friends about this podcast. I hope to see you again next time.